Okay, Erev Pesach, Tavshin, Samach Tes. So, we will be focusing on one particular segment of the Haggadah, the Amar Rav Elazar ben Azariah, the whole discussion of when you speak about Yetzias Mitzrayim, nights, days, etc. We will use this as a way to develop a philosophical concept that will help us understand the difference between Geula, Geula Seinu, and Pedus Nafshenu, the bracha we make on the Haggadah after Magid, Al Geula Seinu, Al Pedus Nafshenu, on our redemption and on the, I guess you might say, another form of redemption of our souls. So we're going to look at that, and we will draw on themes that we've been speaking about, bringing it all together. Now, there's so much to talk about in terms of the order of the Haggadah, and I think last year, it's on the OU website, we spoke about the famous Malbim's explanation of the order of the Seder, the Pasuk, V'higadata lebincha v'yom ha'hu le'mor, bavor zeh asa Hashem li b'tesi mi'mitzrayim, that proof text Pasuk from Shemos, Yud Gimel, Pasuk Ches, that is what the Baal Haggadah used to set up the structure of the Haggadah, paragraph by paragraph, and you can go in online and pull that up. We're not going to do that again. That's the famous Malbim. We also spoke last year in Parshas Bo about the concept of Zeh and Zos, Ba'avor Zeh, the Tam's question, Ma Zos, the Chacham's question, Ma Ha'avodah HaZos, Zeh Keli Vanveh. We'll draw on that a little bit. We'll go back to that a little bit, but the full explanation, the full treatment is also online in the Shir, about also on the OU website. I think it's entitled The Difference Between Zeh and Zos. Okay, we will draw on our themes to some degree that we've been working with Zman and Moed, the Eitz and the Pri, the changing nature of the Matzah, the Tzafun. This helps bring this all together again. What we're going to start with is the paragraph, Amar of Elazar ben Azariah. Elazar ben Azariah says, I'm like 70 years old, v'lo zachisi, and I didn't have the zechus, that it should be said that the established law is that you do mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. In other words, there was a machlokas, and they were debating whether the mitzvah of mentioning the going out of Egypt, which we fulfill by saying that Parsha Tzitzis in Shema, should be said in the day, or should we be said also at night. Now, how do we paskin? Obviously, we paskin, you do it twice. Now, Elazar ben Azariah says, and the question is, what does this have to do with anything? I'm like 70. What does that mean? Okay, what does that have to do with his opinion? He is of the opinion you definitely mention it at night, but he couldn't enforce his opinion upon the Beis Din, upon the Sanhedrin. So though he believed this to be the case, and though he was like 70 years old, which we have to explain why that's relevant, he could not get the Sanhedrin at the time to accept his impression, his strong feeling that this is the halacha. Until Ben Zoma came around and found a drasha, he actually could prove it from the psukim. And once Ben Zoma was able to darshan the words, kol yemei chayecha, right? He quotes the pasuk in Devarim, laman tizkor, so that you should remember, as yom tzeischa mi'eretz Mitzrayim, the day you went out of the land of Egypt, kol yemei chayecha. So Ben Zoma was able to darshan on the word kol. It should have just said, remember it, yemei chayecha. By adding kol, that would be also including the nights. And so once Ben Zoma said this, he had some type of legal standing. He had a drasha. In other words, he had a proof text that his impression that you should say the Yetzias Mitzrayim at night really had a grounding and had a halachic basis. And then he was very grateful that somebody came and kind of established what he believed to be right, but he couldn't establish it. However, we go on to say that Chachamim, they read the Pasuk differently. The other Chachamim, they said, no. Kol Yemei Chayecha doesn't mean that. Yemei Chayecha means in Olam Hazeh. Kol Yemei Chayecha means even in Yemos HaMashiach, we're going to say about Yetzias Mitzrayim. So they didn't necessarily agree entirely, but nevertheless, in the end, by virtue of how Sanhedrin functioned, this was accepted. Now, Let's talk about this a little bit. Before we begin to talk about it, let's just go off on a little bit of a tangent and talk about the history that led to Rav Elazar ben Azariah being the Av Beis Din. So, he was a young man, as we know. This took place after the Chorban. After the Chorban, the sages gathered in Yavne, as you know. And there are many, many stories. This is, I mentioned this book once before, a great book by Rav Avigdor Miller, Zochono Livracha, short book, great, description of the whole era post-Chorban. Now, when they were in Yavne, what happened was there was a Nasi. There was always a Nasi. The Nasi's position was very important because the office of the Nasi was the sole remnant of the House of David. In other words, the government of Bnei Yisrael, the Malchus Beis David. And he was a symbol of the unity and the sovereignty of the Jewish people. So they always maintained a descendant of the House of David in the form of the Nasi to kind of be the spokesman for the Jewish people. Also, in addition to that, the Nasi was called upon to get involved in political dealings with Rome, with the government. So the Nasi had to be a person of stature, a person that whose lineage was impeccable, a person usually who was very wealthy. That was the office of the Nasi. And in addition to that, though, there was the Av Beis Din, the head of the Sanhedrin. Now, this is the time of Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel was the Nasi in Yavne from the house of Beis David. And without getting into all the stories and the history, Rabban Gamliel felt that it was imperative to conduct himself and to treat his office with severe, intense kind of a demand for compliance and, Rabban Gamliel. He felt that he needed to consolidate the people under one authority, and he was very, demanding, and he came to blows with the Av Beis Din, who at the time was Rav Yeshua. Now what happened was the following, that there always was a halacha that the Kiddush HaChodesh, which we spoke about, the importance of being Mekadesh the Zman, right? Kiddush HaChodesh was the decision of the Av Beis Din. The Rosh Beis Din declares the Chodesh. So at the time of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was, the famous Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, was the Av Beis Din, but the problem was he wasn't in Yavne with the Nasi and with the rest of the Chachamim. He had settled somewhere else. So the practice was that when they're not together, the witnesses come to the Nasi, and they would come to Yavne, and they come to the place of the assembly where the Sanhedrin is. So for a long time, the witnesses were coming to Yavne to Rabbi Gamliel, and he got used to being in charge of the Kiddush HaChodesh. But then, after Yochanan ben Zakkai was no longer the Av Beis Din, then Rav Yeshua became the Av Beis Din, and he was with the Nasi in Yavne, and there became a machlokas, and the Nasi did not accept Rabbi Yeshua, who was the Av Beis Din and in charge of Kiddush HaChodesh, his decision regarding this issue in a certain area. And people got very upset, because it really was Rabbi Yeshua's jurisdiction. Also, there was another case where he made Rabbi Yeshua stand for a long time, and he dressed him down, and he made him stand in front of the whole assembly while he continued to lecture. The people got very upset at Rabban Gamliel, and they decided to depose him. Now imagine this. He is from Beis David, and the Sanhedrin decides that he can't be the Nasi. They're going to depose him. So that's always a conflict. That's always a problem. But here, this deposing of Rabban Gamliel took place not just smoothly, not just because he really truly was Lishma, and he felt what he was doing was right in order to consolidate the authority. He accepted this, and he came to the Sanhedrin, to the Beis Din, every day and sat in the back and participated, accepted this completely, with total humility, and eventually went to ask Mechila from Rabbi Yeshua. And this was a simple, seamless transition, which is unheard of. Now, who are they going to choose? So the natural choice would be Rabbi Yeshua, except that would be too much of a slap in the face to Rabban Gamliel. And then they thought about Rabbi Akiva. The problem is that if somebody would replace the Nasi, you can't work with Rabbi Akiva, who came from Gerim. And they felt that whoever would replace him, even if, despite the fact that the Nasi didn't have to be from Malchus Beis David, it was just the tradition to keep the authority in that, in the known family, whoever would replace Rabban Gamliel, he was not someone you tampered with, this was a very great person, would have to have this chuyos to be able to withstand the, you know, the kitrug, in other words, the prosecution, so to speak, of taking Rabban Gamliel's place. And they felt that Rekiva didn't have that strength, he had no yichus. So they turned to Rav Elazar, who was a young boy, but he was very wealthy and he was brilliant beyond his years. And the fact that he was young was very important because they understood that it's very possible that they will reinstate Rabban Gamliel because he was the right person. And once they reinstate him, what are they going to do with the Nasi that had taken his place? Throw him to the side and say, too bad? They needed someone who would understand that although he would be moved to the side temporarily and he would be an incumbent, it wouldn't really be a threat in the end to Rabban Gamliel, and that he would accept it because of his youth and the fact that it was odd that he would even take such a position. It was a weird circumstance. And that's how they came to choose Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So the fact is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Rav Elazar ben Azariah look old to give him a little bit of dignity, you know, so he's now the Nasi. And despite the fact that he's a Nasi, and despite the fact that a miracle took place for him, nevertheless, he's stating, although I obviously have the haskama of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take this position because he did a miracle for me, that's not enough for them to accept the halacha because I feel that the halacha should be this way. I need a proof. Now, it goes further than that. Okay? Let's go deeper into the machlokas. The fact that Hashem made him look old means HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt he was a worthy substitute for Rabban Gamliel and worthy to be Nasi of Klal Yisrael. Okay, it says in the Gemara that from the day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah took over, here it is. It says in the Midrash. No, here. No. And no, the Gemara in Bracha says, from the day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah took over, they had to turn over all of the benches in the Beis Midrash to make room for tons more people that would come now to learn, now that Rav Elazar ben Azariah was there. Now why? Just because they liked Rav Elazar ben Azariah more or not? And this is going to help us understand his opinion that you say Kriya Shema at night. What was his attitude? His attitude was very different than Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, when he headed up the assembly in Yavne, he was very selective about who was allowed to come and join the assembly, who was allowed to come and learn. And Rabban Gamliel held that anyone, any Talmud, call Talmud, She'ein tocho kabaro, that he's not learning lishma, and his intellectual drive to know what they're teaching in the assembly, in Yavne, in the Beis Medrash, doesn't match his implementation and his level of righteousness and his level of dikta kamitzvahs, is not allowed to come. He's not allowed to come. She'ein, so kol talmud she'ein tocho kabaro, al yikanes lebeis hamedrash, should not come into the Beis Hamedrash. He felt that if you're not lishma, if you're not 100% through and through a real Talmud that can that's not just there for, you know, because intellectually you enjoy it or you're not willing to really do the hard work of becoming everything you learn, you're not allowed to come into the Beis Hamedrash. That was Rabban Gamliel's approach, very demanding, so that the people that were there would form the core, the future, the heart of Klal Yisrael. However, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, he didn't hold like that at all. He said, everybody's welcome, no matter why you want to come to learn, no matter where you're holding in life, everybody's welcome in the Beis Medrash. So the day that Rav Elazar ben Azariah became the Nasi, they had to, you know, take out benches, turn over benches, whatever it says. I'm not sure what turning over benches mean, but they had to make a lot of space for a lot more people. That was Rav Elazar ben Azariah's approach. By the way, in the end, they did reinstate Rabban Gamliel. Anyway, so he had an approach here that everybody can learn. And this approach is also at the core of why he felt that you can say Yitzias Mitzrayim Balelos at night. But he couldn't prove it. He just had the impression. It seemed right to him. It was his derech of thinking. So what's the machlokas based on? The machlokas is based on Chumash, Shemos Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Mem Aleph. In Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Mem Aleph, it tells us that be'etzem hayom ha'u, and in that day, on during the day, Klal Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim. Right? We know this? Everybody knows that Klal Yisrael walked out of Mitzrayim during the day. So now the question is, if they went out of Mitzrayim during the day, we should speak about Yitzias Mitzrayim during the day. Why do we speak about Yitzias Mitzrayim at night? So now we get to the deeper level of this. Well, what happened at night then? What happened at night? Now we say on Magid, Al Geula Seinu, there's two stages. The ending bracha of Magid, Baruch Hashem, right? It's a long bracha. It ends, Al Geula Seinu, on our Geula, V'al Pedus Nafshenu, and on the redemption of our souls. Now, we also know they were redeemed at night. What time at night? Chatzos. We also know, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, in the middle of the day, they actually walked out of Mitzrayim. These two things go together. There are two stages to Geulas Mitzrayim. There's the nighttime and the daytime. There's the Geula and the Pedus Nafshenu. So which is which? Well, it seems that first chronologically, at night it would be the Geula, and during the day it would be the Pidyon. So what is Geula and what is Pidyon? So Geula is the salvation. Salvation from what? Salvation from being slaves. Now, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from being slaves, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu save the Jewish people from being slaves? Because we were so much greater than everybody around us? No, because you know the whole famous, we talk about it all the time, the Gemara says that the Malachim put up, you know, went into an uproar on the Yam. They said, why are these people meriting this great salvation? Elu ovdei avodah zarah, ve'elu ovdei avodah zarah. They're morally, they're intellectually, not morally, they're intellectually tamei. Morally, they were not tamei. When we talk about the 49th level of tumah, okay, we've mentioned this a lot of times, but it's basic. When we talk about the 49th level of tumah that Klal Yisrael are on, and there's only 50, be very careful. Not moral, not ethical. They were not murderers and adulterers and liars, and they weren't the Egyptians. They were not shtufei zima, seeped in immorality. In fact, you know that Moshe couldn't find the reason that they deserve this persecution until he finally deduced from the whole episode there with, you know, Rosh Alama Taka Reyecha, when he saw Dasan and Aviram fighting and they said, hey, you know, who do you think you are? He realized, you know what, they're not loyal to each other. One will speak Lashon Hara about the other. They'll, you know. So then he said, oh, that must be their sin. You know, they have, maybe there's a little sin aschinam here. But otherwise, he couldn't find any shortcoming in them. So they were not morally or ethically, you know, on such a low level. What we're speaking about is intellectually, they were not quite monotheists. They didn't quite grasp the essence of monotheism. They had an allegiance to the concept of serving nature, images, over the avodah zarah. This is what, you know, what they had fallen to in terms of being influenced by the Egyptians. And they had to be re-educated, and they had to understand, and this was what the Makos were for, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is stronger than all the forces of nature or the God concepts of Egypt. There is only one God. You don't need an intermediary. That was the whole Egel. It was a hard concept to relearn. It had been lost since the time of the Avos and the Imos. So intellectually they were tummy. And that's what the Malachim say, you know, Elo Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Elo Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So why did Hashem save us? We weren't so unique and different and dedicated, you know, we had dedicated ourselves to becoming great monotheists and all of the implications of that. So you have to understand what a goel is. Okay, what a goel is. A goel, for example, in Chumash, we talk about somebody, or somebody is killed. And what happens when somebody is killed? So there, the goel hadam, somebody who is close of kin, a relative, has the right to take revenge, in a sense, on the murderer, accidental murderer, until he runs to the Eir Miklat, if he leaves the Eir Miklat after he's sentenced to remain in the Eir Miklat, if he leaves, the Goel Hadam can take revenge. What right, why is this person a Goel? What right does he have? What is his identity as the Goel? His identity is based on the concept that I have the right to take revenge because that person who you killed is my relative. It's about me. It's my relative you killed. That person's status is wrapped up in my status. You can't just assume that this person has nobody that is willing to take care of them or that is concerned about them or is responsible for them. This person had me who is responsible for them. This person is not in a vacuum. I'm the goel. So it's not really about the murdered victim. It's about the fact that this murdered victim had somebody who cared about them, who takes responsibility for them, and that person is called the goel. So the identity of the goel is, in a sense, much more important than the identity of the victim himself. It's the goel, it's the closeness that turns the person into a goel. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu distinguishes between Kal Yisrael and the Egyptians, on the night of the Giloy Shechin, on the night of Makos Bechoros, that's called the Geula. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes, as we say in the Haggadah, and reveals himself in this great act of Giloy Shechina, Anivalo Malach, Anivalo Sarf, me and not an intermediary, no angel, no messenger, nobody, me alone. The message is, I don't really care about the status, the spiritual status of these people right now. What's important is they're my people. I'm the Goel. This is the nation that I made a promise to. These are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that I have a particular affinity to. If you take advantage of them, you're taking advantage of me. If you oppress them, you're oppressing me. This is not some isolated nation. This is a direct assault against me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So by HaKadosh Baruch Hu becoming the Goel, by us being redeemed, we are being told that what matters here is that you are going to be, you're extracted from your position as slaves, beginning a journey towards very great things. Because why? Because me. I no longer allow you to be slaves. That's the Geula. We are extracted physically from our status as slaves, because God cares about us. However, that doesn't make us into great spiritual elevated people. That just makes us connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a physical redemption. The physical redemption takes place at Chatzos. How do we know it's a physical redemption? Because they're no longer slaves anymore at that time. The Egyptians say, go, 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 go. But we don't go. We're no longer slaves. We are Hashem's protected people. Hashem is not embarrassed to, in a sense, declare, and we shouldn't be embarrassed to declare, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a special relationship with one nation, but we deserve it. We've committed enough and sacrificed enough for it. And until this day, by the way, that geula, that freedom, that salvation, you might say, a redemption, is something we always draw upon. For example, we say in Shemoneh Esrei in the bracha of Avraham, in the first bracha of Magen Avraham, Mevi Goel Libnei Bnehem, you will again bring the Goel to the grandchildren of the original ancestors. Why? Leman Shemo, on account of your name, on account of Hashem's name, he brings a Goel. The Goel always goes back. Not to the redeemed. The focus is not on the redeemed, but who the redeemer is. So we say you're going to bring the goel for your own name, Leman Shemo, for Hashem's name. Also, we say in the Bach of Gal Yisrael, same idea. Galenu Mehera, what are the next words? Leman Shemecha, for your name. Whenever you talk about geula, you're talking about Hashem demanding everybody to be aware that these are my people. You're tampering. You're starting up with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself when you start up with the Jewish people. That can't be like washed away or brushed under the rug. We say, for example, in Isnari, in Lachadodi, and the paragraph that starts with Isnari, we end and we say, Karva el nafshi ge'ala. Close to my soul is the Goel, the Geula. In other words, what's important in the Geula is you know who the Goel is. And that's what became clear to the Egyptians, and they hands off the Jewish people. We were redeemed physically because they became aware of who the Goel is. So we were no longer slaves. We were physically free. However, despite all this, we were still in Mitzrayim. And despite all this, we were not on a very high level spiritually. And despite all this, we ourselves had no idea what was in store for us down the road. We didn't know what would happen on the Yam, that we would be able to say Zekeli Ve'an Vehu. We didn't know how we'd begin to learn all the ideas of monotheism and commit ourselves to it and say Nase when Hashem offered it to us. We didn't know what the experience of Har Sinai would be like. We did not know. We were infants. just born that moment, we had no idea what was in store for us in a practical way. By the way, one of the reasons you put a betza on the Seder plate is an egg has like a two-phased birth. First, it's hatched, so it's extracted from the mother, the chicken. Then it, first it's laid. First it's laid, and then it's hatched. So at night, in a sense, we're extracted from the Egyptians. We're not their slaves anymore. The egg is laid, so to speak. But it takes time for the egg to hatch and for us to kind of, you know, break out into the sun and get a sense of what's around us. That begins the next day when we actually leave Mitzrayim, but it doesn't reach its fruition for a while, just like an egg takes a while to hatch. And so eventually the Yam, the Kabbalah Satorah, was a process. So our birth took place in stages as a nation. So even though we're not physically enslaved, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu is standing there behind us as the Goel, and they're not touching us anymore, but who are we as a people? We are not spiritually who we would become. We didn't understand the things we would come to learn. And so there needs to be also a spiritual side to the redemption, not just the physical side. There needs to be a total turning over, you know, a total revamping of how we think of ourselves. Because don't forget, in Mitzrayim, just shortly before this, not so, I mean, you know, 80 years before this, but this was the night of the Egyptian Gullus was so dark and so painful that Klal Yisrael had basically, you know, given up hope. And, you know, as you know the story with Miriam, Amram and Yocheved, they said, what's the point? You know, what's our mission? Why do we have to live? What's our contribution here? You know, we might as well just fade away. Eventually Moshe comes. He begins to restore hope that they are a great people and they have a great future. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take them out of this and they're going to become the firstborn child and they're going to get a Torah. And he's trying to inspire them and give them a vision of what they will become. But it's hard for them to see, hard for them to imagine the great levels that they would achieve. So, and that was what made Moshe's job most difficult. To take a people that were kind of in the womb and try to give them a vision, a glimpse of what it would be like outside, you know, what the destiny was for these people. They were, you know, it was cynical. It was hard to imagine this. So what was necessary was a spiritual redemption, an ability to see something much bigger. And that's pidus nafshenu, pidyon, pidyon. What is, for example, a pidyon haben? So the firstborn is really theoretically designated to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, but the Kohanim, Levim, the Shevet Levi specifically, the Kohanim have taken over that task. You know the whole story. So, but still, nevertheless, we remember that transfer of authority by when we still have a firstborn saying, theoretically, if everything would have gone in order, you would have to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, but the Kohen is going to take your status and a kind of in a sense the Kohen is going to absorb your responsibility into his own and do your job for you so that your status as someone who works in the Beis HaMikdash is transferred to the Kohen. So what a pidyon is a change in status. For the firstborn it's a lowering in a sense. But what a pidyon is a transfer, a change in status. What had to happen to Klal Yisrael is not just the physical geula. They had to forever after stop seeing themselves as avadim, as slaves to other people. And if you get philosophical and mystical, slaves to the Yetzirah, slaves to all the things that compel us to act that are not emes, that don't come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the Torah, all the drives that compel us to act, all the chametz, you've heard all that, right? The philosophical ways of working with these ideas. But the fact is, the Torah frees us to do what's right, to do what's eternal, it gives us eternity, to do what we really, in the deepest recesses of our soul, want to do, whether we know it or not, to do what really drives us, to do what's tefillin, as we spoke about, a real desire of a person to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's really hidden. So we needed to be freed from our impression that we were slaves, not just other people, but slaves to our impulses, slaves to our agenda, slaves to you know, other forces that were stronger than us. That was the pidyon, pidyon nafshenu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also had to invest us with a new way of seeing ourselves. Now, how does that work? Although they were freed the night before, why didn't they leave? Why did they wait till the daytime to leave? So, leaving at their own discretion is the quintessential act of a free person who makes their own decisions. Not someone running away because the opportunity presents itself, but carefully, composed, walking out in order, you know, following your leader. In other words, this is the behavior of people who are making their own choices, not the, you know, mentalities, you say, of avadim, as we said, talk about the mentality of, you know, slave mentality of avadim. In addition, as long as they were in Mitzrayim, they could not be freed spiritually, even if they were freed physically. You know, Moshe couldn't even daven to start or stop the plagues when he was in Mitzrayim, the land itself. They needed to physically leave the land that was shtufei zima, seeped in immorality and all kinds of ways, and be in the midbar, in a empty place, before they could be released from the Mitzrayim way of thinking. So in the daytime, when the sun is shining, which represents clarity and true understanding, they walk out of Mitzrayim freely, and that's when the beginning of the Pidyon Nafshenu takes place, the redemption, the transfer of status of our souls. And even if we would be later in history subjugated to other forces, downtrodden, compelled to follow other people's rules, the new reality for Klal Yisrael was, the unique quirk in our personality is, no matter how much we'd be physically enslaved in the future, we would never, ever be spiritually enslaved again. We would always know who we were and what we were doing, and even the fact that the deepest, darkest gullus was part and parcel of our mission of being B'nai B'chor Yisrael. So even in the Holocaust, for example, when they walked to the gas chambers and they sang Ani Mamin, they were not subjugated to the Nazis. They knew that with their deaths, they are proving to the world that no one can ever destroy the Jewish people or their connection to Torah or the Torah itself. They understood that trying to destroy the Jewish people is like trying to destroy God. It's a worthless attempt. It's not going to succeed. In the end, they'll destroy themselves, which is happening, as we've spoken about. Germany is depopulating at an alarming rate. They really don't feel like they have anything to contribute anymore. They're done. And eventually they destroy themselves. Not only, of course, the war, which obliterated the country, but further on, long-term effects. But the point is that even those Jews at that point were spiritually redeemed, and they understood the purpose of what they were doing, despite the fact that it was, of course, very painful. There was a certain purpose and satisfaction even in that meaning. And that's the Pidus Nafshenu. That is the spiritual redemption that will never leave us. We always know we are designated for a unique task, and nobody can take us away from it. And we will complete that task in the worst of circumstances. Even as physical avadim, no one will take us off that task. We'll perform that task in the gas chambers, in the concentration camps. As avadim, we're still performing the task of demonstrating that we are spiritually elevated b'nei b'chor Yisrael. So, how does this get back to Rav Elazar ben Azariah? Rav Elazar ben Azariah said, you know, when you have to talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, despite the fact that the spiritual redemption and the actual going out of the land took place during the day, so Rav Elazar ben Azariah said, but I hold that even the physical redemption, the guf, without the neshama, is valuable. However, Chachamim said, no, what's the point of a physical redemption if there's no spiritual redemption? What's the point of saying we are the chosen people, we are God's people, if spiritually you're just like the non-Jews? So a lot of people today go, I'm a Jew, I'm proud to be a Jew, but I don't keep anything. What's the point of a physical redemption for Jews who are spiritually indistinguishable from the non-Jews? What's the point that they should live their physical lives out and have no spiritual content? It's low kedai. We don't value it at all. That's what Chachamim said. No, you only say Yetzias Mitzrayim in the daytime when there was a pedus nafshenu, a spiritual redemption, because a Jew without a neshama might as well not even live. What's the point? right? Rav Elazar ben Azariah said, no way. Just even the fact that a person is physically able to say, I'm a Jew, even though there's no neshama, and they live without the Torah mitzvahs, just physically as a Jew, that has value. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about that and came down as the goal. You say it's Yitzias Mitzrayim Balelos, even at night, when they were physically redeemed. He believed that, but he didn't have a drasha. In other words, he didn't have a pasuk to pin it on. And even though Hashem did miracles for him, which means to say that Hashem felt that he was worthy of being the Nasi, and he liked his derech of thinking, and he agreed, it was mikubal in Shemayim, his derech of thinking. And how do you see that derech of thinking? When he became the Nasi, he let everybody come to learn. That's the connection. He said, the Beis Medrash is open for everybody, and I'm not looking into their personal life, and if they're keeping mitzvahs behind closed doors, and what they're doing with their learning. Everybody can come to the Beis Medrash, because a guf without a neshama is still worth something. To do something low lishma, if it's not yet lishma, is still worth something. So I let everybody in. The fact that Hashem made him look old means that Hashem also accepted that derech. That was mikubal b'shamayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in agreement with that approach to life, an agreement with his feeling that you should say Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos, even at night when the physical redemption only took place. So, but he was stymied, because despite the fact that a miracle took place for him, and this was his opinion, that's not how you decide halacha. You decide halacha by if the majority will finally vote to agree with you. And if you can find a source, a proof text, and if it fits into the 13 and only 13 Torah scientific methods that you're allowed to use to prove a halacha. You can only establish halacha based on certain principles, intellectual principles, and if you can base it on a pasuk and you can make the argument and the majority will vote with you, then it will become halacha. And we don't care how many miracles a Kadosh Baruch Hu does. It's not b'shamayim, it's down here, it has to be accepted. So finally, in the end, this was accepted, and that's how we paskin today. But Chachamim also added, that's the others, added this other explanation, which we're not going to speak about, this world, the next world, etc. Now, so this was the derech. A neshama, a Jew with a guf and a neshama, that's the ideal. A Jew just with a guf, not yet with the neshama fully engaged, Velazar ben Azariah says that's also good. That also is a start. That's not something we reject. You're welcome. We say Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos, and we hold on, because obviously Rav Elazar ben Azariah felt that, you know, these people are salvageable. You can work with them. Now, very, very interesting. We're going to go into the Bavur Zeh, which we've spoken about, but it's such a jewel in the crown of my grandfather's Torah learning that he's given us. It bears repeating every year. Who said Maror zesh anu ochlim, matzah zesh anu ochlim, Pesach zesh anu ochlim? Who said that? Rabban Gamliel, the same Rabban Gamliel that they deposed, or Elazar ben Azariah deposed. Okay, Rabban Gamliel says, why do we eat these things? Well, you eat Korban Pesach because Hashem passed over the houses, right? That's why we eat Korban Pesach. You eat matzah because the Geula came so fast there was no time, which is a whole big question, because there was plenty of time, right? Now we know there was plenty of time. They didn't go out till the morning. So what, just this is a segue, this is a tangent. There was physical time, but there was no time. We've spoken about this, right? L'malim en azman, no chatzos. There was time, wasn't operative here. And what turns matzah into chametz is the quality of time. And Klal Yisrael were created at that, in that moment, Yetzias Mitzrayim, the moment of our first stage of our birth was chatzos, which is not a time. Well, we're not going to go back into that. That's last week's class. In any case, the Geula came so quickly, and that's what the matzah represents. And why do we murmur? Because, you know, we're remembering that they had embittered our lives. Now, the only problem is, Rabban Gamliel says that you need to say these three things. In other words, you need to have kavana, Pesach, matzah, murmur, or you just wasted your time. You really didn't fulfill the mitzvah. Which mitzvah? So the mitzvah goes back to that famous pasuk, which is a source for the whole Seder night. V'higadata lebincha bayom hahu. You should teach your children on this day. Day, by the way, but it also applies to the night. They got it to Labincha Bayom Hahu Leimor, saying, Bavur Ze, on account of this, Asa Hashem Li Hashem did great things for me when I went out of Mitzrayim. Bavur Ze, on account of what? Rabban Gamliel says, on account of the things I can point to, Pesach Matzamar, and point to and say, on account of this, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. So, the halacha is, when do you tell Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? At the time, like we say in the Haggadah, at the time, Shematzo Sumorim, that everything is in front of you, and you can point to it. Because the question was, do you maybe start saying it by Rosh Chodesh, when the Nes started? Do you start saying it in the daytime? When do you start the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? So he points out, you have to say it when Matzo Umorar is in front of you, that you can point to it to fulfill what the pasuk says, v'igadet to labinuch, you should tell your children, ba'avur zeh, see these things? On account of these, that's why Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. And then Rabbi Gamliel says, so what do you say about each thing? You say, Pesach is that Hashem skipped over our houses, etc. What's wrong here? A big, huge, huge problem. Right? First of all, Pesach is something we eat to remember that Hashem skipped over our houses when He saved us. So that's why we eat Pesach. We eat Pesach to remember the Nes. Why do you eat Marah? To remember the bitterness. Why do you eat Matzah? To remember the Nes of the Geula coming so quickly. So, but the Pasuk says, because of this, Hashem did Nisim. No, this is because Hashem did Nisim. Right? All you have to do is, instead of saying Bavur Zeh, say Zeh Bavur. This is because Hashem did great Nisim when I left Mitzrayim. But the Pasuk in the Chumash doesn't say Zeh Bavur. Should have said, v'higadet al abincha b'yom ahu, tell your children on that day, in the future, saying, zeh bavur, this is because, I'm doing all these things because Hashem did great nisim when He took me out of Mitzrayim. No. V'higadet al abincha, tell your children, b'yom ahu leimor, bavur, on account of this, Hashem did great nisim. So something's wrong. So my grandfather explains. The Jewish people, sitting in their huts, eating the Korban Pesach, right when it became night of Tesvav, of the 15th of Nisan. Why were they eating Korban Pesach? Because Moshe told them to. And that's it. Nothing else. Moshe said, take a 1-year-old little seh, sheep, and you can't roast, you can't boil it, you have to roast it, you can't break any bones, you have to eat it with your belts on, you have to eat it in a pre-designated group. These are the halachos. Can you explain why? No. Okay, why did they eat Korban Pesach? They ate Korban Pesach because Moshe said so. It wasn't until later that Hashem passed over the houses. Why did they eat matzah? Well, they always ate matzah. Matzah was lechem oni for all their years in Mitzrayim. Why are they eating it tonight? Why is there a special mitzvah to eat matzah now? That was what they always ate. Because Moshe said, you have to eat matzah with the Korban Pesach. Later on, much later, the Geula would come so quickly that there wouldn't even be time, and you go into all those ideas about time, for the dough to rise. Why are they eating Marar? They're still in Marar, in the bitter situation. At any time, the Egyptians could burst into their houses and slaughter them all. Why are they eating Marar? To remember the bitterness? It hasn't ended yet. Because Moshe said so. The reason the Jewish people in Mitzrayim ate Pesach Matzah Marah is for one reason only. They had emunah that the mitzvahs that they're going to do, that Moshe told them to do, would one day come to mean much more than they can imagine right now. And not just one day, in a few hours. The mitzvahs they're doing now, which don't have so much time, which are a little low lishma. Okay, in other words, they're lishma because I'm doing it because Moshe said so. But they had no way to know what those mitzvahs would come to represent. The huge nisim that those mitzvahs would come to symbolize. They had no way, no vision. They were not Nevi'im. So when they did the mitzvah, they did it on account of what Moshe told us to. In other words, you do it because it's the right thing. It doesn't necessarily have the tam, like the lechemone, like we spoke about. It's the bark, not the pre, the trunk, not the fruit. You do it because this is what I need to do. Because they had emunah that they would one day, they would come to know the value of these mitzvahs and what these mitzvahs really meant and the power of these mitzvahs, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu took them out of Mitzrayim with great nisim. Because of their willingness to trust that this would evolve into something much greater than they can imagine. So that similar idea to Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Lo lishma is okay. It will come to lishma. A guf without a neshama, it's okay. The neshama will come. When they ate matzah maror, they didn't understand. They didn't have, in a sense, the vision of the great Giloy Shechina and the Nisim. It was like a guf. You did the actions. You ate the matzah. You ate the maror. It's the body. It's physical. It's tem. You know, it's you get it done. It's like a guf almost without a neshama. But then they realized that what they had in their hands, the power of the mitzvahs they had in their hands, that's the neshama, that's the vision, that's the understanding, that's the clarity, that's the Giloy Shechina. That will come. That was Rav Elazar ben Azariah's approach. You say Yetzias Mitzrayim, you mention it even at night where you live in a, you know, you're physically a Jew. You go through the actions. Many of us, even from committed Jews, often we do things lo lishma. Lo lishma means, you know, for our own reasons. Even when we do something lishma because Hashem told us to, we have to realize, and this goes back to what we spoke about last week, even when we do something lishma because it's a mitzvah, because Hashem told us to, because it's in the Torah, that's it. In a sense, that is, we are working with a mitzvah that will one day come to mean more to us than we can ever imagine, but we can't see it yet. The smaller portion of the matzah that we spoke about last week, that we keep in our Seder plate, that we eat with maror, that represents the process, the zman, the hard work, the limited portion we get in this world. Nobody has everything they want. Nobody. When you eat that matzah, you don't taste Gan Eden. You don't experience, you know, the full understanding of the mitzvah we're doing. We eat the matzah because it's a mitzvah. It's lishma on that level. But in a sense, we're waiting, and we have emuna, like they did in Mitzrayim, that soon in the future, at Chatzos, right, we're going to take out what's hidden, tzafon, the other half of the matzah. And that very same matzah that we're eating now, that we think is a tasteless piece of matzah, becomes for us the schar. It's not that we work hard here and there's some other schar that has nothing to do with the efforts. The Jewish people in Mitzrayim learned that the mitzvah itself was the schar that they couldn't see yet. The mitzvah of eating Pesach was going to be a huge nes that they didn't know yet. The mitzvah itself becomes the schar. It's the same material. Once it's first, it's lechemoni, and then it magically transforms echatzos, which we spent time last week on, into the lechem of cheros, the dessert, the schar, the hidden, the tzafon, what's hidden. This is the secret of the Seder, really. But this is at the core of Rav Elazar ben Azariah's insistence that you can say Yetzias Mitzrayim at night, which we do. So what that does for us is it tells us that every person along the way, is working with, when we have mitzvahs, okay, and behaviors, things we should do, things we shouldn't do, we should not treat them lightly, take them for granted. They're not throwaways. We don't know the power of what's in our hands, what they will blossom into, what these mitzvahs will become for us, what they're doing spiritually in the world, the power that those mitzvahs are doing it's in this world, what they will finally reveal themselves to be. When they ate that Pesach, they didn't know what would come from it. They couldn't imagine what would come from it, right? So we're working with mitzvahs, and we treat them casually. We pass them off. We don't have kavana. You know, we ignore them. We forget to do them. We're mevatel this one and transgress that one. We're working with you know, material of extreme power and force that if we just invest in it, a kavana, give it a little taste, take it a little seriously, and have a little patience, great things that are still tough and still hidden, the other half, the larger half, that we're taking out later, will come back to us in tremendous, tremendous measure until we say in the Haggadah, Dayenu, Acha Yivlu, Sifsosenu, Milomer, die. The entire lips will be so exhausted from saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, die, die, enough. Now, why would we ever say enough to all the brachos and the nisim and the shefa that Hashem is giving us? It's not that we say, die, don't give us anymore. We'll say, compared to the effort we put in, compared to, you know, the minimal effort we put in to do this, compared to our zchuyot, what you're giving us is way, you know, out of proportion. Die, like it's way more than we bargained, you know, than we expected. We do something small, and the rewards come back to us with such a, for, you know, degree of force, till we, out of humility, say, die. Like, is this really what we created? Is this really what we, the ball we set in motion? We just did a few mitzvahs. So we have to have the fortitude and the emunah to keep going, even with mitzvahs that don't have so much taste or things that are difficult, because in the end, we'll see what they become. So everybody have a wonderful Yantiv. Kosher v'sameach. You're welcome.